Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante and a midweek edition of Andy Shea. Andy, after a week off last week, this week you're going early in the week. Are you ready for that?
Different time window, same two knuckleheads. That's what we got here. Oh, I almost got you to spit your water out mid-drink there. Our carnival travels, Jimmy. You can put us wherever you want in the week rotation. We're mobile, agile, despite our age.
I was just going to say, I'm not sure how mobile nor agile we are anymore, Andy, but we try. We make the effort. And, you know, it's funny. You and I now have been on the Friday schedule for years. So this is a little bit different. Might be, you know what? It might be a little more disconcerting for our listeners than it is for us. So I hope there's no listeners out there who just tune in on Friday so they could hear you, maybe hear their own questions on Ask Andy, because we are going to hit that. And I haven't given you this heads up yet, Andy. You got to have your armor on for today's Ask Andy. Can you guess why?
No clue, because I wasn't here last week.
Okay, this goes back a couple weeks. We'll get to that in quarter number three with our traditional Ask Andy. But sure. Our listeners, I think a couple of them were probably thinking you were dodging them when you were out last week because they have some issues with you. We will get to that in Q3. In the meantime, we've been talking for the last few weeks, Andy, about how much we're finally getting closer to actual football, fall practice and all that. It'll be fun to be talking football again. But it's still the off season, still some diversions going on in this crazy college football world. And we're going to hit on a bit of it. So first of all, let's start with an update on one of the rules that came in new that I think you and I have both been excited about. The new rule, you got 5 years to play 5 seasons now.
Right.
Forget this red shirt crap. Forget this playing for a seventh or eighth year.
Yep.
Best thing that they've done in I don't know how long, Andy, right?
Yeah, no, I think the 5 and 5 for elite players, it's 3, but it's 5 and 5 for all sports. It makes sense. Remove the old school sort of, it was the last, one of the last old school things that was hanging on was the red shirt and not playing a limited number of games. And then you could still keep your red shirt. It was an easy fix and it took them a little while, but they found the easy fix. 5 and 5, be done. You have 5 years of eligibility, degree chasing, athletic prowess, you know, making a living, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You got 5 years. That's your window. One and done. It makes logical sense in this new era of college sports that it was a smart rule. I think it's overdue. I think it could have been done at least a year ago, maybe two, because of the simplicity of 5 for 5. But it took a while. It's here. Thank goodness. I love the rule.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's universally appreciated because it takes away so much of the gray areas, you know, with the redshirting. Remember when you couldn't play one down? Then they said you could play 4 games. Then it was 4 games and the playoffs. Right. Then they were debating allowing you to play 9 games and get your still have a red shirt, which you're reaching the point of being ridiculous if you were going to allow 9 games, you know. And the 5 years, it's great for, let's face it, a lot of students in general take 5 years to get through college anyway, okay? And the red shirt was becoming so prevalent for players. They were ending up playing the 5 years anyway, but it was giving coaches, you know, gee, do I strategize? I could play Andy in the first 4 games, then not use them. Then I could play Jim in the next 4. It was becoming convoluted. And if you had the medical red shirt that you allowed 1 year, well, can't you, allow 2 years? You appeal it, you apply for it. It was just crazy complicated. So we went through all that just to say, gee, we really like that rule. And here we go. The judicial system steps in again and says, even though the rule stated, if you graduated last year, used up your eligibility in a way where you didn't have a redshirt year. In other words, you played as a freshman, used up any first year eligibility. You played 4 years. So this was class of 22. You were done. You finished under the old rules. All these players started to sue for the right to have one more year.
Right.
And a judge, just one person somewhere, I think this one was in Colorado, said, nah, forget it, NCAA. You made the rule. I'm going to tell you, you can't do that. You got to allow these kids who had graduated under the old rule, finish with their eligibility. You got to give them another year, Andy.
I agree with it. It's a legal precedent, right? Your new rule is 5 for 5, right? The 22-23 class, if you used it up under the old terms, under what you entered, it's not a 5 for 5, right? Like you used up 4, but you didn't get a 5th, right? They're just asking for the 5th. Is the 23-24 class going to do the same thing? I wonder, Jimmy, is the next class after it going to say no, because the rule has been enacted? There is no transitional time period. Don't they fall under the 5 for 5, right? They backed it up to the 23-24 class and said 5 for 5, you know, starting now, and then this is your 5-year window. So it's legal precedence, right? The NCAA drew their line and said, if you use it up and you're in the 22-23 class and you were 4, that's our line. We're going to draw that. Now there's legal precedence, which I don't think the NCAA was wrong for drawing the line. I didn't think it was unfair. I didn't think it was out of bounds, but they lost, right? They lost the legal challenge. So now they know and understand where they stand on the legal front. They might fight back a little bit, but they're going to have to open this up for all sports, except if you signed a professional contract, and give these players one more year of degree chasing, stacking cash, making money, selling their image and likeness, giving them one more year. There's also a flip side for me that feels like, okay, you had a great opportunity you started in a very wild west and you have benefited greatly during your time. And your employer just said, we're going to have a parting of ways and you're fired. And there was a little bit of screaming, like, you know, a kid throwing a tantrum that needs a timeout. No, no, no. And they screamed loud enough and they won legally. So it's like two sides of the coin for me. Like, I don't inherently have a problem with where the NCAA drew the line, but now legally they've been compromised. Their line has been compromised. So they're not apt to take on big legal fights to open themselves up to bigger issues and problems. So I think they might kind of counterpunch a little bit, but I don't think they're really going to fight this one and go after the tail of the dog really hard.
See, I think that they will go after it. And really? I'll hit on a couple of, yeah, I do, because I think it's creating chaos, especially for football. Think about it. You know, we had our budget for the year. We spent our dollars on these players that came in. Now, all of a sudden, it's, oh, no, I got to readjust everything. If I think there's a guy out there who could come back and help us, I got to find more dollars. I've had my team for the last 6-8 months through spring practice and all go through all of this based on this is the roster. And all of a sudden, someone else is going to come back who we thought was done. And if this allowed to go through, think about the guy. They came back, a woman who was the judge who made this ruling on Friday. She came back over the weekend and said, clarified, hey, if you signed the professional contract or, you know, indicated you were going to go pro somewhere, you're out. You can't come back.
Out. Yeah.
How long till that guy says, well, wait a minute. If I had known I could come back for another year in college, I would have never done that. If this holds up, they're going to be right back in court with that guy, Andy.
Maybe, but that one's a harder bridge. I think the signing a pro contract, there was a rule for this. I think the signing the pro contract is a bridge too far to fight. I think you lose that one. I think the NCAA wins that one and the player loses on a legal challenge. This one had some abrupt precedence to it. And a loss of income and opportunity. So I also think, yeah, a little bit of chaos, but welcome to life, right? Like, what plan that you have set in stone, per se, doesn't need a little touch-up and a little paint, Jimmy, right? Like, okay, well, there might be – how many guys do you want on your roster? Don't – I think the difficult part is, yes, they've opened this up, but now – becomes incumbent on the athlete to find a job, right? Like, they have to find the job, find a school, find a team. You know, could it be the old school? You're looking at all sports at this. You know, is it really chaos? That's up to the institutions to choose what they and the schools and the teams. Who do we want and who do we need and what is the best value proposition? I think the schools are in the catbird seat. Personally, they get to choose.
Well, I'm not so sure that they are, Andy, and I'll tell you why right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. For Andy, this is a special Wednesday. This is a special Wednesday edition of our Friday show, Andy. How about that? Does that make sense?
No, but okay.
It's kind of like, it always reminds me. Remember when Monday Night Football, ESPN, it's a special Thursday night edition of Monday Night Football. Well, this is a special Wednesday edition of Friday A&D show. It's quarter number two. We're talking about this ruling a judge made last week about the 5-for-5, 5 years to play 5 seasons. The NCAA, they cut it off. If you graduated last year, we're done playing. Now, this doesn't affect any of the athletes who had redshirted, so they had 5 years correct. For their 4 years of eligibility.
Correct.
It only affects those who didn't redshirt, played 4 seasons in 4 years. It would give them that extra year of eligibility. Andy is okay with it. I have a bit of a problem. Now, had the ruling said, you know what, we're going to give the fifth year to those players, those student athletes from last year, I'd have been okay with it. The problem is they did not. And I thought it was their right to do that. It's kind of like a worker who retires and then the union, everybody gets a raise and he says, hey, wait, what about me? Well,
right. I wanted a raise. Yeah.
You can't, the ruling happened now. It's not retroactive. And I think it causes chaos going forward. You mentioned you didn't think it was that big a deal, but in football, the chaos is these are teams that already started practice or are soon to start practice. They've kind of established, you know, this is the roster. If you have a 150-man limit on the roster, can't go over that. Now, there's probably a lot of teams who are underneath that 105. But I think in other sports, in basketball, where the smaller roster, those rosters are filled out. Are you going to start processing players to bring back somebody?
Why not?
It gets a little bit shaky there, Andy.
You've always
been the man of the people.
It's a free agent opportunity. Penn State, let's look at Penn State's roster. Are you can open, it's a limited number of players, but man, at the DN position, would you not start shopping around and looking to see if anybody's interested in coming in to work out to get that fits in that 22-23 class that has some experience and time under the seat at DN but lost their eligibility?
What if Nick Singleton wanted to come back?
Nick Singleton signed a pro contract. That's a no. I'm talking about players that are eligible under the legal.
Positionally, let's say a hypothetical very good running back wanted to come back. And you're Quentin Martin. You say, hey, wait a minute. I stayed at Penn State because the circumstances were Katron Allen and Nick Singleton finished their eligibility and we're going to be gone. So I feel good about my chances to play. Now, all of a sudden, I'm not going to get on the field. Is it fair to him?
Well, no, but that's up to the school to say, like, no, we're set at that position. The teams get to cherry pick. Penn State gets to cherry pick and position shop from a very small pool of players and look to see if anything fits their needs. Once and needs. I mean, at the running back position, are Matt and his staff out looking at this limited pool of players looking for a running back that is eligible, not somebody who signed a pro contract and they're not eligible. They can't bring them back. And if he is, that's Quentin Martin. Yeah, I feel bad for him, but that means you're not up to what they're looking for because they're shopping and they should have three. I don't think they're shopping for a running back, Jimmy.
Do you think Penn State's going to bring in? Penn State's going to bring in any players?
I think they should look.
Fit this criteria.
I think a DN would help. Why not? What? That's your position of weakness, right? Like it's your glaring black hole weakness. Yeah, D tackle's got some issues as well, but you brought in a decent plethora of big dudes that we don't know a lot about and you're not sure what they're going to do, but you're okay with that. But DN is that's where you're thin to win, right? Why not? Why would you not look at that opportunity and at least window shop and look around and see if there's anything that fits your wants and needs?
Okay. There's one more part to this equation is you go looking around. And in a couple weeks, you might find out the NCAA's appeal was effective.
Correct.
And those guys, well, let's use this opportunity, though, to transition, Andy, from that ruling. And I'm going to use this segue this way. There's the Protect College Sports Act, okay, which is going through Congress. And one of the things I hear a lot is we don't need government interference, okay? And to be honest, in general, my feeling is less government, the better. You know, there are very few times when the government has stepped in and made things better. Here's the only problem with that and why I feel a little bit different on this topic is I'll go back to what we just discussed. The NCAA made a rule. You and I differ on it a little bit, but I thought the NCAA had the right to make that rule. And one judge somewhere says, no, no, we disagree. One woman in Colorado changes the ruling completely. The government is already involved. We've got the judicial area, the judges stepping in.
We've had the judges stepping in for like 6-7 years, Jimmy. The legal battles have been fought on this during this tidal wave. So it's I don't think
the government is already involved.
I think it's more of a governmental thing than a legal thing.
Well, by legal, yes, it's a different arm of the government, but it's still the government stepping in. The NCAA makes the rules, and someone in a government position, in this situation, it was a judge. And as you said, they've been doing it for 6 or 7 years. The NCAA hasn't been running college sports. The judicial system of our government has. So my take on this, you know, Protect College Sports Act is we already have intervention by the judicial system. So I don't really have a major problem with the government stepping in because the government's already involved, Andy. What's your take on Protect College Sports Act?
So it feels like an oxymoron to me, right? Like, I don't have a problem with the oversight, but my question is, protect college sports from what? What do they have to protect college sports from? Is it to protect the players from them, you know, a little bit, maybe. But no, I feel this level of intervention is a protect the NCAA and protect the institutions. That's it. It's not for the players' benefit. There is an element that has been forced into this that benefits the players a little bit and protects them. But is the inherent right of this to protect the players? It's to further protect and embolden the NCAA and the institutions, which is frightening. I mean, absolutely frightening to me, Jimmy, because this College Sports Act would give enforcement mechanisms to the NCAA to further regulate NIL and other issues. Well, that's their glaring weakness. They absolutely are a hot mess train wreck combo at mechanisms to be a regulating body. They're just not good at it. They're a good, you know, sort of like, I guess you could say they're good bus drivers. They're good vehicles and they run outstanding championships, right? But in terms of regulating and NIL and their decision-making and how they operate, when it comes to enforcement mechanisms, Jimmy, they're dinosaurs. So that is my main problem, is that this is to hand more power to the NCAA and to put them more institutionally in charge, when I don't think on the merits they've done much to earn it. I think college football has grown like it has grown. And we're talking about money. This is money. And grown the way it's grown despite the NCAA and their inability. They lost conferences. Bye-bye Pac-12 because the NCAA is an absolute train wreck. So you're going to hand that more power? That's my main problem. The premise of it I don't have a problem with. The actual enactment and institution and where they're giving it to, you're handing it to the NCAA. I just don't feel comfortable and confident that this has enough. They're not good enough. They're not good at their job on this front. They're absolutely not good at their job. And now the government wants to hand them institutional power on this front because they are the old school enforcement agency that played a huge role in the collapse of their structure system. They were inherently responsible for their collapse.
Let me ask you this, Andy. What specifically in the bill or power that the NCAA will acquire because of this, what specifically do you have an issue with?
Enforcement mechanisms to further regulate NIL and, quote, other issues. What the heck does that mean? Even them regulating NIL, that troubles me. And enforcement.
Do you have a problem? I know I'm interrupting, but do you have a problem with they're going to say, hey, signing autographs at a local car dealership, which should be, you know, worth $500, and players are getting $500,000 for it and calling it NIL. Do you have a problem with that being regulated?
No. Do I have a problem with them regulating it? Yeah, I do. Yep.
So in essence, if an alum, a supporter, he wants to pay a player some ridiculous amount of money that really doesn't have anything to do with name and image and likeness, you're okay with it. Andy, I ran out the clock. I'm going to give you a chance, though, to respond to it when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter three, time for Ask Andy. We'll get to that real quickly, but I cut Andy off. It was not fair. My question was, and it stands, do you have any problem with, and do you want any controls at all on NIL, or should alums, should boosters be able to play a player whatever they want to pay him just to play at good old State University?
I would like institutional controls and some borders and boundaries put in place. Yes, I think that would be very, very helpful. I don't trust the NCAA to do it in the best interest of the right parties.
The problem we have here is I'm not sure who I would trust. I get your point, and I'm kind. But then it's like, who do you trust? All right,
correct.
Let's do what we're supposed to do. Let's ask Andy. Because I know there are a few of you who can't wait for this. You waited 2 weeks. Let's do it. Let's start with Mike in Carlisle. He says,
first a
comment on last week's show. I know, Mike. Mike, say hi to Nick for me, okay? First a comment on last week's show. Andy stated that the running back room had, quote, no chance of matching 174 yards per game average as Penn State's rushing achieved in 2025. While I agree that it's highly unlikely that they will average the 174 yards, Andy's answer of no chance is an absurd statement. However, Andy's craziest comment was, if this group averages 100 to 105 yards per game, that is pretty good. What a ridiculous take. Last year, 105 yards would have put Penn State right behind 2-10 Boston College. Throughout the season, please continue to remind us of this friendly bet that you two made, which was under and over 130 yards per game. Could I suggest visiting the team's updated weekly average each week on every Friday show? Yes, Mike, we can do that. Now my question to Andy. Penn State lost A.J. Harrison, the transfer portal to Indiana. How do you think, Andy, Darius Dixon's skills compare to Harris?
So, first of all, the running back and the yardage thing. I'm addressing it. It's partly predicated on the offensive line. right? It's partly predicated on the quarterback being the most valuable weapon they have on the offensive side of the ball. He is the kind of player that the offense is built on what his best assets are and what he can do. Last year, we knew that offense had to be built on running the football and the offensive line. I'm not saying that these running backs aren't any good. In fact, it's the polar opposite. I think they're so widely diverse in three of them, and they're so uniquely talented that I don't think you just have to strictly line up and run the ball. And I frankly don't think Penn State's offensive line is built to do that at a level. We're not going to revisit this every week, Mike, because the first four games are just JV scrimmages. Let's not do that. Let's say after six games we take a look at it and give us a little more meat on the bone. I'm good with that. And it's holistically, like, I don't see this. I don't see Penn State's offense functioning well if the center and focus of their ability to put points on the board and move the ball down the field is set on running the football. I don't see that as, I'm not saying they can't, they're not going to run. I'm just saying I don't see that as possible. And what was the second part of Mike's question?
Darius,
the last
one he dropped on? Darius, yeah. Dixon's skills compared to A.J. Harris.
A.J. Harris has top 100 player in the country, elite skills. Darius Dixon does not. It's not a big gap between the two, but it's enough to know that one's a top, you know, potential top three round draft pick in the NFL, next level talent. One's a really, really good college football player that can do his job better than most. And that's Dixon. And Dixon will get a little better and could become one of those top 100 players. He has to take a fairly big step, in my opinion, but I also think he's just absolutely 100% capable as he's built right now. Remember, I said the corners, they don't have to get a whole lot better. It'd be nice if they did, but they don't have to. I think they're capable, very serviceable, and very prepared to be good, solid Big Ten corners.
Okay, I don't necessarily need the answer to it, but I just want to show the consistency of the questions we got, Andy. And it's also coming from our old buddy Tony in Philadelphia. It's really tough for me to read Tony's questions without in my head hearing like a Rocky Balboa voice, okay?
Hey, you want some water? How's you
Tony
doing?
Tony from Philadelphia says,
Tony, how you doing?
Why is Andy so consistently negative? His blatant statement that Drew Aller would not be drafted, wrong. I believe early on he predicted that Penn State would likely finish this year 6-6. Yet to be determined, but obviously wrong again. And last week took the cake, predicting that the running game would be lucky to get 105 yards a game. What is wrong with you, Andy? It would not shock me if the running game matched the yards per game of last year, and especially when you say at times they will be playing three tight ends. He probably doesn't even like mushrooms on pizza either.
All right, no, let's just hit. Yuck, no veggies on a pizza. No, yuck. Yuck, no. No pineapples, no green peppers, no onions, no mushrooms, no meat. Meat and cheese, pizza, legal.
To the uninitiated, this is Tony, and I had to ask that he put out his question just for that part of it. This has been an ongoing discussion on the Keystone Kickoff Show, is what decade. Goes on pizza, decade of this discussion. And we on staff are pretty consistent in our answer. Meat belongs on pizza.
So, Tony, 6-6 is not what I said they should be. You're wrong. I'm just going to call it out. Don't tell me, don't put words in my mouth. I said 6-6 is below expectation. I said 8-4 is the most likely scenario, and that meets expectations. 9-3 is exceeding expectations. 10-2. They're in special season and a playoff team mode. That's not the expectation for this football team, right?
You know what? This is why, Andy, I made sure we got Tony's question in there. I love salty Andy. let's move on. Let's get to Eric in Ashburn, Virginia, who says, I'm intrigued about the positional battles in camp. Can you give me one position group that people aren't paying attention to that will have major implications on the team's success this season? Keep entertaining us, Jim and Andy. I love listening to you both.
Yeah, defensive tackle. Good question, Eric. Defensive tackle. Pay attention to it through camp. Who ends up, you know, 1, 2, and 3, right? They're probably going to play 4, and you're going to get some garbage time in the first 4 games for, you know, a fifth guy and that. But it's who ends up being in the primary rotation in between the ends, in front of the linebackers in the middle, the 1, 2, and 3. Who are those 3 guys? How does that shake out? Because there's a good number of them. There's 3, you know, transfer portal guys to start with. Are they all going to be the 1, 2, and 3? Or, you know, what does that look like? I think in a very good question by Eric, right inside the window, defensive tackle, look who ends up 1, 2, and 3.
You know, Andy, my first instinct was defensive end. And I think my hesitancy to it is a little bit like what your hesitation was with the defensive tackle, which is for years. Remember how I talked about back with Manny Diaz as the coordinator? You know, that's my opportune time to drop Manny Diaz's name. I said there were 20 starters on the defense because there's the tendency to rotate players. New defensive coordinator, we don't know if it'll work the same way, but I suspect it will. And specifically at those positions, defensive tackle, defensive end. But I do think it's going to be a battle to see not just who's the first one on the field, but also what that rotation will look like. Let's get sneak one more in here. And this is Brad in Perkasie. With Ohio State inking a $15 million a year jersey patch with Chase, what should Penn State demand, and who should they look at to be a sponsor?
Well, they got a lot of Adidas money to not wear Nike. That's a really good start. An individual patch? Are you talking about? Like
Ohio State now teams can put a patch on their jersey, just like you see it in baseball now. You can put patches on. And yes, yeah, you know, it's and a spot
hockey of, helmets. Yeah. So I think Penn State already got a lot of money from West Shore Homes, big booster on the stadium front, right? Like West Shore Field at Beaver Stadium, right? Like, or West Shore State, whatever.
But this is another opportunity for another company. This is another
opportunity. I don't know. How much are they going to be looking for? How much would Penn State be looking for? $10
million? No, there's talk that the value – I just read someone came out saying there's a handful of teams that they see as the top who have not inked this kind of deal. I think it was like Texas, Michigan, Penn State. And the thought is, hey, this was something that could be valued up to $25 or even $30 million.
Yeah. So I see a lot of, like, the one that just pops in my head for no other reason. What about Penn State Medical Group? I mean, you see their clinics everywhere in Pennsylvania. They've got hospitals. You know what I mean? There's got to be money there because there's so much money in healthcare, not for the people, but for the institutions.
And as we get older, we realize that even more.
Yeah, let's just – that seemed – I don't know if that's incestual. You know, it's tied up money, inside tied up money. I don't know what the tie is. There's got to be a naming factor, but there's so much money in healthcare.
Give me an outside company you think would be appropriate.
Like a major national, big-time outside one?
Or something that's a Pennsylvania company.
Capital Blue Cross. There you go. How about that one?
You're I'm really stuck on healthcare.
Yeah, well, there's money there. Look how much money is in, you know, pharma and healthcare and that kind of those kind of businesses. You know, could it be like a pharma company? A couple of baseball teams have, like, you know, like Amgen or like, you know, Pfizer or, you know, whatever. One of those companies possibly.
You know what? The Pirates have sheets. Anyway, We've got a conversation to pick up when we come back, Andy.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. We're welcoming back Andy. I'm Jim. Andy, before we got interrupted with Ask Andy segment, we were talking about this Protect College Sports Act, and you showed a reluctance for it, and I shared the concerns. I typically hate governmental intervention.
Yes,
governmental intervention is more typically adds fuel to the fire than it fixes anything. But the problem I have and why I'm not as cautiously optimistic about it is there's nobody in charge in college sports right now.
Nobody.
The NCAA is fangless. The Big Ten, Southeast Conference commissioners have way too much power.
Correct. And the conferences are running the show, particularly two of them.
And ESPN and Fox are running those two conferences.
Correct. The money, just follow the money, Jimmy. Just follow the money. The power rests when you follow the money.
Let's look at some of the things specifically part of this bill, Andy. And you could be objectionable to the whole thing and still look at elements of this and say, hey, that's a good idea. So let's start with this. The Southeast Conference and the Big Ten initially were against it.
Correct.
They made some revisions, considerable revisions.
How about concessions, or how about caving in and making sure the Big Ten and SEC, their voices were heard? And there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of negotiating. But let's face it, the Big Ten and the SEC called the shots.
And the fact is, those conferences spent years building up their product, making it a great TV product, very valuable. And that money they get from ESPN and Fox, you know, we're not a socialist country. There's no obligation for them to share that wealth with the other conferences. Now, one of these concessions was in the compensation to players. The House settlement made it so that the universities could pay the players, student athletes across the board, around $21 million a year. They're talking about, the hope was that would put an end to the shenanigans with NIL.
It won't.
It didn't work.
It didn't.
Now they're talking about upping the number and splitting the money up a bit. You know, so much money to get players to your school and so much more to retain players, where that number could go from like 21 million to 48 million. Your thoughts
roster
on that?
Roster retention. I knew it when it started, and Ohio State did it 2 years ago when they won the national championship. They did it well, Jimmy. They did it better than most, right? They set sort of the bar. Indiana and Kurt Cignetti are kind of a mix and match, right? They don't have one clear definable path. They're sort of the chameleon. They're very good at a little bit of everything. Ohio State clearly runs they do roster retention, and they do it better than most, Jimmy. And The Big Ten is looking for their elite schools to have the ability to stay elite, right? And be able to do roster retention at another level because they see how important it is in the next step of this evolution of college football. It's a big deal. Roster retention is sort of the catalyst. It used to be recruiting and development. Roster retention is development and the ability to keep them. And it that also quiets the transfer portal just a little bit.
Are you happy with that rule or not? Yes or no?
Yeah, I like that one. Because it benefits players. And I'm a players guy, even though people don't think I am.
And there's also some protection. I alluded to it with the media deals that the Southeast Conference and Big Ten have. There's some protection for that.
Yeah, they're protecting themselves. I don't like that. That's incestual protection. But I understand why they would demand it. I just don't be afraid of a little competition. And they're further insulating themselves from a little bit of competition. I don't know that they really have any, but we don't know what the future looks like. I just think they're CYAing on this one. And you can't blame them for doing it. I don't think it obviously was a walkaway concession because they had to grant it. So if that was one of the no bargains.
Andy, if we agree that the Big Ten and Southeast Conference, they did the work that it took to Correct. Become a valuable entity and Correct. Earn those media rights, should they then be required to share that wealth with these other conferences who have not done that same work?
No, but they can't play the Raiders. They played Raiders of the Lost Ark to build themselves, right? They cherry-picked and both of them played Raiders of the Lost Ark to other conferences in an era when they could. They want to make sure that doesn't happen again now that they've done that and built their own. It's sort of two-faced to me, but I understand it. Inherently, the protections, you can't blame them for arguing for them, but they're just further flexing their muscle because they can. And if they had built it inherently on their own merits, no, they played Raiders of the Lost Ark, Jimmy, and went and you know, collapsed other conference, a whole other conference, and you know,
but is
the two of them basically ravaged another one.
Is it any different than a company that's really successful going to a company that's not so successful, finds a really bright guy there, a star, and says, we'll pay you more money to come work for us? Texas and Oklahoma, they said, hey, come on over to the Southeast Conference. We'll pay you what you're worth. Not like the Big 12. Anyway, let's hit on a couple of the other things. I thought, how about creating more national law consistency over NIL regulations as opposed to state-based, where, hey, in Texas, it just means more there. So
right.
The judges are going to rule. They're going to take a guy like Sorsby and a rule gambling on the game itself and say, that's no big deal. Because I'm a Texas Tech alum, we're not going to allow the NCAA to suspend you.
This is a rare case where I like the broader oversight rather than the power in the states, because the states are inherently biased, right? They're inherently biased.
Yes.
And a more national, because college football is a national game. It's not a state-based game, right? And it's not regional. It's national, right? It was regional in a long time gone by, right? Like, we're old enough there. I said it. We're old and bald enough to know when college football was regionally based. That is nowhere near the case anymore. So you can't have the regional bias and being the basis of your, you know, your sort of roadmap. It can't be. I think this is one of the stronger, better considerations that is part of this act. I think it's really, really relevant and important and needed. And has to be, to me, that's one of the stronger priorities that need to be, you know, sort of have a process and be implemented in a working understandable way sooner than later. That one needs to move quick, I feel, because they're playing catch up with the game itself. They need to get on the same level as the game. This will help the game. So I feel this one's really important, and that for that reason, because I think it's not regional, it's not state-based, and it's not fair because they're biased.
Just real quick, Andy, and I think this is kind of in your opinions on these things. I would have liked to have seen, and I know this is how it works, a much more limited bill where they would pick out things that seem obvious and just do those. And I'm going to add one more that I think might fit into this category, the one free transfer.
Yeah, I don't... I don't mind one. I don't inherently have a problem with two. More than two is problematic.
And
two could be problematic for some. That's potato, potato, tomato, tomato. I would one would be fine. My kind of feeling and preferences in this wild, wild west, you rein it in slowly rather than fastly. Go to two and look to go to one. You know what I mean? Figure out your steps that you can go from two to one. One is the right number. I agree with you on that inherently. But I think running from this open season to one is a little bit of a bridge too far to implement structurally and fundamentally soundly. I think it's better to go two to one in a slow process. But I don't disagree with you one bit. I think one is the right number. Freebie.
I get the point you're making. You got me thinking about that. Yeah. What I don't know, I'll be honest, I don't know if there's exceptions to it. If the coach leaves, I do think there's, a graduate transfer. If you, finish your degree in 4 years, do you get another free one then?
Right.
Which I could get on board with, because I think one of the things that is a negative to these transfers, the free transfers, and I know it gets forgotten about, is education. You do too many of these transfers, it's hard to get credits going and passed along from school to school.
Yeah, the last thing I think I'd just like to point out real quick, one of the things I think is really important, it might have not been seen, the prohibition of compensation to recruits before enrollment. I think that one's really, that one's really important to me. That sort of closes a window, right? Like it closes a crazy train and shuts it down. That one needs to be, that's one of the silent assassins in this bill.
And it hits one of those core issues, which if you're paying someone before he gets here, you're paying him to come to your school.
Correct.
In essence. All right, Andy, that's going to have to be the final word. Thank you for your return. Thank you for handling Ask Andy this week. They tried to beat you up, Andy. I got a feeling we haven't heard the end of that whole discussion about Penn State's running game. Thank you, Andy. Thank all of you for tuning in. Come back next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.